today on this episode of the PeerDirect Special Spotlight.
Again, following what we're learning in breast cancer, this drug is not associated with responses restricted to overexpressed 3+ by IHC tumors.
Today, Drs. Dizon and Campos join the podcast to discuss HER2-positive endometrial and ovarian cancers, targeted therapy highlights from ESMO 2025 in this PeerDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Welcome back to the next part of our discussion. Hello, I'm Don Dizon. I'm the Jane F. DeForge Chair in Hematology and Oncology at Tufts University School of Medicine, Professor of Medicine at Tufts University, and Chief of the Hematology and Oncology Service Line at Tufts Medicine in Boston, Massachusetts.
And I'm Susanna Campos. I am the Clinical Director of the Division of Gynecological Oncology at Dana-Farber in Boston, Massachusetts, and an Assistant Professor of Medicine at Harvard Medical School in Boston, Massachusetts.
Yeah, I think the difference is we are now moving to an area where, you know, we're not limited to monoclonal antibodies like trastuzumab or even pertuzumab. We have these new ADCs, antibody-drug conjugates, and the one that everyone is sort of most excited, because I think it was the first one out of the gate, was trastuzumab deruxtecan.
Absolutely. Very exciting compound, huh? That made a bit of another splash, you know, a couple of years ago with the DESTINY-PanTumor trial, which was really quite a very basic trial when you take a look at it. They looked at different patient populations. We're going to restrict it to GYN at this point in time, and there were only 40 patients in each cohort. And when they looked at ovarian, when they looked at endometrium, and when they looked at cervical, and this was just recently updated at ESMO this past couple of months, the response rates were absolutely astronomical. I mean, some as high as 85%, especially in the endometrium world.
Yeah, and I think that is very interesting. And you are on the NCCN committee for endometrial cancers. And you want to just tell everyone how
that came to light?
No, the recommendation was from NCCN based on the data.
No, that's a very good point. So the FDA recommended and approved trastuzumab DXd for HER2-neu 3+.
3+.
3+, right. Okay, across all solid tumors, for a matter of fact. However, given the fact that the data was absolutely so instrumental in the DESTINY-PanTumor trial, where you're seeing response rates even in the IHC 2+ on the order of 40 to 50%, the NCCN guidelines decided that this was pivotal and that we should make this available to our patients. The question really is, if you go back to the DESTINY-PanTumor trial and really dissect it out, there were 40 patients per cohort, okay? And even in patients that had an IHC of 1+, there were response rates of about 25%.
I was actually going to ask you about that.
Yes.
You know, because it's, you know, again, following what we're learning in breast cancer, this drug is not associated with responses restricted to overexpress 3+ by IHC tumors. It is showing activity in 2, in 1. In fact, there's even some who have shown no expression by IHC who are responding, the so-called ultra-low.
Ultra-low, yeah, called 0, yes.
All 0. And it's being shown to be associated with responses with HER2 mutations.
Exactly.
So it seems almost as if that HER2 is, or trastuzumab DXd is not a biomarker-driven treatment.
Let's hope so. You know, that actually brings me to a very good trial, actually, that was done by our Japanese colleagues, the STATUS trial, which was done in carcinosarcoma of the uterus, which is a very difficult histological subtype.
Absolutely.
And this was actually getting to the point of HER2-neu low expressions, but they looked at HER2-neu 2+ and above, and that was considered positive, and HER2-neu 1+, and they found very, very intriguing results, actually. You know, the response rates, even the HER2-neu 1+, was greater than 60%. The cohorts were very small. Let's just keep it as such. But again, that really suggests what we've been talking about and what emanates and actually parallels breast cancer is that perhaps these drugs have activity in HER2-neu 1+ and HER2-neu 0.
So the question is, do you even need to check for HER2?
Correct. Okay. Or is it just that the magnitude of benefit is higher with a higher expression at that point in time?
So if I look at the world of breast oncology and where we're going with that, it's, you know, trastuzumab DXd is being moved up.
Yes.
You know, being moved up, you know, first line metastatic to post neoadjuvant chemo to within neoadjuvant treatment regimens. And does this sway you at all in terms of where the optimal point is, where you use trastuzumab DXd versus, say, trastuzumab?
You know, I don't know yet. And there's a clinical study. There's a clinical study, GOG, I think 3068, okay, that is actually looking at that in endometrial cancer, stages 3, 4, and is randomizing patients to trastuzumab DXd plus a IO therapy versus trastuzumab DXd versus plus pembrolizumab. And there's good old-fashioned carboplatinum plus pembrolizumab. So we don't know the answer to that, but time will tell.
Yeah, and I think it's just really interesting to see if we can push the proverbial envelope to this one subgroup. Say, let's just pick IHC 3+ endometrial cancers, and can we get to the point where we don't need the chemo backbone?
Exactly. Well, we'll see, won't we? Yeah. We absolutely will see. And we've talked a lot about endometrial cancer, okay? But in terms of ovarian cancer, also there's activity in ovarian cancer. The DESTINY-PanO-Tumor trial has shown a very nice activity. That was, again, updated at ESMO this past year. But also there's been some very interesting different compounds looking at, you know, with different payloads, okay?
Yeah.
Looking at activity in ovarian cancer. There's one particular drug called decitinib plus AK-104 plus BEV in clear cell carcinoma, which is very dear to your heart. I know, okay, because you published data before on that too, but showed a response rate on the order of 60% and above. So very exciting. You know, we talk about trastuzumab DXd, but there's DB1303 in endometrial cancer, there's decitinib, there are other bispecifics. So this world is actually growing tremendously.
Right. And it's interesting the way that they're all being, you know, developed, right? So, you know, HER2 not only is it the target for treatment to that induces responses and improves survival endpoint, but now using it as, you know, the marker by which you deliver cytotoxic therapy is this antibody drug conjugate. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it is very interesting to see that the world of HER2-positive gynecologic cancers, if anything, is getting more complicated.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Not only in the target is probably the most basic element, it's the payload that's becoming much more exciting and what that payload may be. And the sequencing of these particular different ADCs in the management of these patients is becoming more and more difficult.
Yeah, and it'll be very interesting to see if you sequentially use these monoclonal antibodies, does HER2 continue to be
expressed?
Yeah.
Which brings me to another point, which I think is a very interesting clinical point. You know, we've all measured HER2-new on every specimen that we possibly can. But how do you manage a patient that has had, for example, a HER2-new 1+, and you don't have a clinical trial to deliver, and clearly trastuzumab DXd is not approved in that particular case? I have gotten into the habit of rebiopsying and been pleasantly surprised about the heterogeneity of HER2-new expression. In your practice, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the reason. So my practice has always been, particularly for first relapse, to always do the biopsy, regardless of, say, how long someone had been off of therapy, because I do think the tumor does change and it mutates. And some of the data that we developed when I was at Brown in gynecologic cancers suggested that the genomics profiles vary by site of tumor. So if it's in the liver versus the lung or the brain.
Or the node.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There's a different profile. So again, it just highlights that idea that, you know, tumor heterogeneity is a very relevant thing and maybe the reason that we see exceptional responses in some, yet growth in other parts. But yeah, I think it's very real. But I do agree with you that rebiopsying and looking at the biomarkers of relevance that have, you know, these therapeutic implications, it is really important to do.
It is. I mean, it really opens the door to targeted therapies that these patients would not otherwise have, not only if it makes them eligible for trastuzumab DXd, or if there's a clinical trial that is specifically looking at HER2-new, 1+ and the like.
Remind me, the DESTINY pan-tumor trial, that did enroll people with 0, 1+, or just 1+?
So they basically enrolled 40 patients completely in each cohort. And then there was both, you know, independent review and central review. And what was became obvious was that not everybody had 3+ or 2+. You know, when they did a central review, some were 0 and some were 1+.
That's interesting, isn't it?
It is interesting. But if you go back and you look at the responses among those individuals, albeit they're not as fortified as the IHC 3+, but the truth be told is you're having a 25% objective response rate within a HER2 new 1+ tumor, which I think is actually quite inviting.
No, I think that's very clinically relevant and quite significant. Usually our threshold is 10%. This is not interesting. 25%, I wouldn't.
I think it's monumental, to be honest with you. So we have ovarian cancer, and there's a very interesting study. We talked about the Destiny Pan-Tumor 02 trial, but there's also the Destiny 01 trial, which is looking in HER2-new positive upfront ovarian cancer with a maintenance therapy of trastuzumab DXd plus Bev versus Bev. So that should be quite interesting. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it concerns me insofar as the toxicities for T-DXd are not ones that we're, you know, relatively comfortable with, and it requires a lot of monitoring for, and that's the interstitial lung disease.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's the part that we haven't talked about. We've talked about all the good stuff that in terms of HER2-new, the targeted therapy is the monospecifics, and also the bispecifics and the antibody-drug conjugates, but we have to be mindful of the toxicity because the toxicity is a bit novel, okay? What concerns you most about HER2-new targeted therapies?
No, I think, you know, as we go through and develop newer agents, I think the first thing is the differential toxicities, which we're seeing with many of these new drugs and compounds that are coming up. But I think we're going to be challenged about sequence.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You know, can HER2 continuously be a target as it is in breast? Right. And can you continue to cycle through with HER2 positive treatments in a disease that is HER2 positive? Or at some point, does tumor heterogeneity come into play, and the proportion of that tumor that's HER2 negative is what's going to drive the outcomes.
Yeah. My focus has been, you know, mostly with the HER2 new targeted therapies has been the pneumonitis and the interstitial lung disease. That's really has kind of, we've driven that home very significantly with our patients. Yeah. Alike. And also the cardiac toxicity to a lesser extent.
Exactly. Not like we saw with trastuzumab.
No. I think we kind of got accustomed to that. Yes. Perhaps we manage it better. Yes. Well, this has been wonderful, and I've so much appreciated this dialogue. And thanks for joining me today. This has really been great. And thank you for joining us for our discussion on the evolving data we saw at ESMO and how it can influence our approach to HER2-new positive gynecological malignancies. Thank you.
And that's today's special spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at peerdirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions? Please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@peerdirect.com. Listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing, Medical News Roundup, and just ask, "What's my Flash Briefing?" Thanks today to our guests, Drs. Dizon and Campos. Join me next time for the episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.